Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Monday, August 19th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
It's very nice to have you with us. Also with me today, Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly. Good to be here.
Man, I've got tons of energy from the two of you for Monday morning. This is great. So, John.
Yeah, Siri says hello, too.
John, I wanted to start with you. You wrote in Particle Debris last week, which people, if you're not checking out Particle Debris, you should. It's always pretty interesting. You shined the Particle Debris spotlight on an article about the iMac.
Yeah, Particle Debris, I picked out my favorite article of the week and kind of explore it and celebrate it. This one is from William Gallagher at Apple Insider, where he talked about the story of the iMac is the story of Apple. And it's a charming article that has a sort of a slant that I hadn't thought about deeply. And you know, because we have been feeling a little bit upset about the state of the Mac in the previous few years. There was that long hiatus in the desert where we thought Apple was losing interest in the Mac at all. And then in 2018, we got the new Mac Mini, we got the new MacBook Air, and we got the new Mac Pro. And so Apple's back on track. But for a long time there, we were kind of feeling like Apple was souring on the iMac. But William pointed out that the iMac launched the resurrection of Apple under Steve Jobs. It came at an interesting time. Came at a time when the PC industry was kind of in a rut, when they were adverse to change. They were glommed onto the small 1.4 megabyte floppy disk, the 3.5-inch floppies. They were glommed onto their own kind of desktop serial ports and odd connectors and SCSI. And Apple came along, and the idea was to resurrect Apple by delivering a machine that could look forward and get people excited. And this was the Johnny Ive, Steve Jobs effort for the original Bondi iMac and the Jeff Goldblum commercial. and not only was Apple looking forward, dispensing with SCSI and dispensing with the floppy drive, but embracing USB, something the PC industry had kind of ignored because they were just stuck in the mud. And this was a machine that was forward-looking, exciting, warm to the touch, attractive to own and have, colorful, forward-looking, and it was a machine that sort of set the stage for the resurrection of Apple. And it also came coincidentally at a time when people were struggling to get on the internet. Author Gallagher didn't refer to this particular ad, but I remember there was an ad where there was a runoff between two actors, engineers who were trying to get on the internet, and it took a guy on assembling a PC out of the box and getting it set up. And from the time he pulled it out of the box until he got on the internet was an enormously long period of time. And contrast that to Apple, you know, you turn it on, you plug it in. There was this automatic connection to Earthlink on the desktop, and within minutes you were on the internet. Yeah. And so the confluence of events conspired to, you know, get people excited about the internet and a new Mac compared to the old stuck-in-the-mud gray plastic performance areas where nomenclature nobody could figure out and backward-looking. So that theme that sort of put Apple on the map and saved the company continued for all the years as the beloved desktop machine for people. And it has continued to sort of be the student and home enthusiast desktop of choice. And it has evolved and continued to evolve. So, Brian,
I get the Brian feeling you have something comments. To say about this.
Yeah. Let me see here. Let me warm up my vocal cords. John, you ignorant slut. No, actually, I don't even mean that even the tiniest bit. All props to, of course, Chevy Chase for the original joke.
Well, I'm just the messenger. If you don't like this, I'm free to call Mr. Gallagher.
I don't even think that Mr. Gallagher is necessarily an ignorant slut. However, I do think that it's cherry picking some aspects of what was happening in the PC industry and with Apple at the time. Because I see many of those bullet points you listed there, John, are have some grounding in reality, but there was another huge reality, and that was that the PC industry was competing on price and was in this massive rush to the bottom. And Steve Jobs knew that Apple would not win if Apple was going to try to compete on price too. And the purpose of the iMac was to change the rules of competing, change the rules of PC competition, because with the iMac, Apple went from competing on price to competing on style, fashion, and experience.
Well, I agree.
All of that is a lot more important than this forward-looking device and the other things too. It's far, far, far more important.
I remember going through that ruckus, and I remember the dispensing of this of the Apple desktop bus and the moving to USB and the elimination of the floppy. And there was a lot of blunt criticism from the PC community. But the sense I got from the Apple
and Mac community.
Oh, yeah.
The sense I got from that community was is that Apple, this was a more naive time when Apple could change the rules, as you said. And the feeling was that Apple was seeing the future. And if you were in the frame of mind, as a lot of us were, that we wanted to move forward and we wanted to have a glimpse of the future and the way things were going, getting rid of the floppy was one way to do that. As a digital age, and so while you could be critical and say it wasn't compatible and it didn't use known standards, there was also that odd sense of excitement about how this is a new class of machine, this is a forward-looking machine. And for a lot of people, that was exciting.
Well, the thing I remember the most about it when it first came out was that aside from there's no floppy drive and aside from it doesn't use ADB, what am I going to do with all my ADB, with all the accessories I already bought for the old thing Apple told me I was supposed to use, which is a thing that happens every few years, you know, anyway. The thing that I remember the most about when the iMac came out and listening to people talk about it was A, it's a color, because it's not beige and it's not black. So it's a color, like, whoa. And then the other thing I remember hearing about it a lot is it's one piece. Like, everybody was wondering where the computer was in the computer, because it just looked like a really interestingly designed monitor for the most part, because nobody could really wrap their heads around there being a whole computer tucked in underneath the CRT. So those are the two things at the time.
About 10 years ago, I wrote that story, Kelly, about I think it was in Denmark, where a guy was sharing his internet service and the police came in and there was an iMac sitting on the desk. And the police kept insisting, where's the CPU box? And he says, that's the computer. And they said, that's the display. Where's the box?
Yeah, exactly. And like, those are the things that I remember about it. And, you know, like when you talk about, when people talk about Apple on a, on a larger scale, right? Like, I feel like that break point, you know, when you talk about like the before times and the after times, like if we had to pick like the modern era of Apple, like the one of the big break points in there is the iMac. It's not so much, to me anyway, it's not so much Steve returning as it is the iMac, because it was the second time that Apple unleashed technology on the world, and not the last, that no one had ever seen before, right? Like, nobody had ever, like, most people really hadn't seen a one-piece computer. Nobody'd seen one that was a color. And at the time, it did a lot of stuff that people didn't realize you could do with a computer or find common. I mean, that's, like, one of my, the second Apple computer I purchased myself was the iMac DV. I had a Blueberry iMac. And one of the things I remember about it was, you know, that commercial you're talking about where it was like 8 minutes to get the computer on the internet. And I remember being mad because Mr. Kelly had taken the mouse and was like playing with the mouse and wouldn't let me have it. So I couldn't plug it in. So I was like, you are blowing my 8 minutes. Give me back my pieces. And and like that, and when I think about it, you know, that's the kind of stuff I think about, is like, that's like, to Brian's point, experience, like the experience of taking that out of the box and setting it up and plugging everything in and being on the internet seamlessly was amazing. Yeah, and it was nothing inside. It wasn't anything he could do with his Windows machine.
Modem. Yeah. So it was an appliance.
Yeah. And he was still on a PC at the time. And I remember, you know, having conversations with him where I was like, well, I got, you know, everything's connected now. And I remember him going, yeah, but what do you do? I'm like, no. You know that ad on TV with the guy from Jurassic Park? There's no step three. There's no step three. Like, yeah, that, you know, that's what I remember about it. And so seeing this come up as, you know, using the iMac as sort of part of the, as a parallel, you know, kind of to Apple history was sort of an interesting idea. But I will always have a soft spot for the iMac for this reason.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
Who in the right man mind wanted to play with the hockey puck mouse?
Oh, that was
a disaster. With all respect to Mr. Kelly. Like,
he wanted
to play with the mouse.
Oh, no, he didn't want to, like, use it as a mouse. He just was sort of, like, staring at it. How do you use this? How are you supposed to, like, click on anything? It's totally round. I don't understand. You know, yeah, it was not.
Right, got it.
Yeah.
So he's fiddling with it more than he was playing with it.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he was playing with it as if a cat, you know, like that kind of thing. Like, how does this work? What are you supposed to do? Like, he was trying to, like, you know, sort of figure it out. And, you know, and I remember that being one of the first really stark differences that I noticed between his machine and mine was him going, yeah, but what do you do? And I'm like, no, like that's not a thing. You know, when you have a, you know, when you have an Apple computer, you plug it all in and you're done.
One of the things I've noticed is when I know I watch TV shows, maybe chick flicks or shows about creative people, there's always an iMac in the background where somebody's doing artwork or creative work or email. Mm-hmm. There's a case to be made for, despite the enormous success of the iPhone, this lingering fascination with the cutesy desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people still have affection for that, and Apple's still fueling that affection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes they feel it a little more than other times. The Sunflower iMac comes to mind.
I call it the makeup mirror.
Yeah. The lampshade iMac, I've heard it.
I was working for Apple at that time. We were in line at WWDC waiting to get in, and apparently a newsstand in Canada had released its copy of Time magazine early before the announcement, and somebody smuggled it into the line, and we were looking at it before Steve even unveiled.
Yeah, it was the night before.
My boss was standing next to me, and I got my hands on this copy of the cover picture of Time magazine, and Morgan said, well, what do you think of that? And I said, oh my God, it's a makeup mirror.
Yep.
He turned green. I thought I was going to get fired on the spot.
Well, like, yeah, it had many nicknames, but again, you know, it was a thing that, like, nobody'd seen. It seemed sort of interesting. So, you know.
Well, the story goes that Steve Jobs was walking through a garden one time, right? And he saw this series of sunflowers, and he had his epiphany.
The Sunflower iMac.
He went back to Johnny Ive and he said, I want a Sunflower iMac. Didn't last very long.
No.
It was just one blip in the succession of the computer.
Yeah.
You know, I have a complaint about the G4 iMac.
Yeah.
And that was that the base had a rounded edge.
Mm-hmm.
And it needed to have a sharp edge.
Mm-hmm.
It needed a square aluminum box, right?
Nope. I don't even mind that it was. No, I actually like that device, and that arm was amazing, right? Then that arm
was the precursor. Was a serious chunk of metal.
Yeah.
Precursor to the $1,000 arm that we're seeing today for the for the big display, but no, the base, even if it was still made of the same plastic, it had these round curved edges, which allowed the thing to really to be pitch back too easily, in my opinion, and it needed to have these. That base needed to come down and meet the flat edge with a sharp edge. It's just that. Just I am flabbergasted that little detail escaped Steve.
Yeah, I wonder if it was because it didn't look as nice or something, and like everything else was a rounded edge, so
Yeah, it needed to not have a rounded edge.
Yeah. Oh, I get it. I agree with you. But I wonder if that's what it was like, we don't want any sharp edge on here. So
that was the last iMac that allowed you to change the vertical position of the display.
Yep.
Exceeding, I've heard a lot of complaints about succeeding versions where you can rotate it forward and back, but you can't change the height. If it isn't quite right on your desk, you have to put it on a book or something.
You get a book. Yep.
Well, there's going to be $1,000 stand and a $5,000 monitor for that.
Which won't be an iMac, but yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, and I will always have a soft spot for the iMac because, like I said, that feels like what sort of ushered in the era of the Apple that we know now. And so that's,
Though, but because it allowed the terms of competition to be changed.
Yes, and that's why.
It was a radical change. Mm-hmm. Overnight, Apple is competing on an experience.
Steve Jobs to understand that was his brilliance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the whole rest of the PC industry, led by Dell, mm-hmm. was competing on the basis of, like, how can we, you know, my long-running joke for Dell is that Dell spent money on R&D, but it was all for, like, how can we build a PC with one less screw?
Yeah.
Cheap, cheap, cheap. Let's make it cheaper. Let's make it cheaper. Let's make it cheaper. No one was doing any R&D in technologies. Mm-hmm. No one was doing any R&D into bringing anything new to the PC. It was all R&D to make things cheaper.
Well, that's because Apple. Dell was going after the business customer, and they were after the lowest cost machine. Steve Jobs understood Rob properly. He couldn't compete in the business community, and the only way he was going to make it a success was to appeal to consumers who had credit card purchase authority. Mm-hmm.
But it's still it was still interesting, like, in what it was. And like you said, Brian, you know, with experience, but also because it was something we'd never seen before. And Apple is bringing us a thing we'd never seen before. And they continued to do that. They've done it since, more than once. And, like, but that's always, like, the kind of the first thing I think of is that Bondi machine. It was so pretty.
Yes.
I have many fond memories.
Handle. You could pick it up and it was warm to the touch and had the built-in handle. You could move it from desk to kitchen table or whatever.
Yep.
Appliance.
It was pretty great. All right. Well, thank you, John, for shining the spotlight on that. And like I said, you should definitely go check out Particle Debris.
Thanks to William Gallagher at Apple Insider.
Yeah. And the article was a fun read. While I'm thanking people, I would also like to, shining spotlights on people, I guess I should say. I would like to shine a spotlight on our sponsor. And our sponsor today is My Wall Street. You know, it can be complicated to get started investing in the stock market. You can find brokers who help you do it, and they will gladly take your money. But they aren't necessarily there to give you any sort of guidance and help you decide if you are making good decisions or if you could make a better decision. Or if you're even close to, you know, getting a return on any of that money. And some of that stuff seems like a black box, and there isn't a whole lot of interest in helping you along that path. So it's really easy to get really overwhelmed. And once you're overwhelmed, it's really easy to just sort of give up and decide it's not for you. Well, that's where My Wall Street comes in. They offer a short list of stocks. Their investors have spent hours researching them. Some of these have grown fivefold since they ended up on that short list. And because My Wall Street are not brokers, they are able to offer a simplified investing option for you that's more like having an investing companion than having to have a broker. Now, as a TDO listener, you can access the entire My Wall Street app for free for 30 days. All the advice, all of the information, all of the tips, and you get that for 30 days instead of the usual 7-day trial. So here's how you do that. Go to mywallstreet.com/TDO. That's mywallst.com/TDO and download the app now to get access to all of that guidance. And then if you want to continue on that journey, you can do so for $9.99 a month. And we'd like to thank My Wall Street for sponsoring the show today. Now, our other topic, just for a couple of minutes here, is The Morning Show, which is the sort of lead show, it seems like, of what's going to come out on TV Plus, one of the ones from Apple TV, from Apple that has come out. They've got a 3-minute trailer now that's come out. And Brian, we watched it this morning. What did you think?
Well, I liked it for one thing. Full of strife, full of but and I know that John's going to take us to drama school here in a bit, but it's it was not full of ugly strife. It was full of drama. It was full of tension. Mm-hmm. It was full of I guess part of what struck me about this trailer is that I've been wondering how we're going to make a drama. I could see making a comedy about,
yeah, especially considering the cast.
Especially considering the cast, yes, I could like that doesn't take any kind of imagination to go, oh, yeah, they're gonna make a comedy, but making a drama about a morning show, like how were they going to do that? I was with the team that's involved in this show. I was confident that it was going to be good, mm-hmm. but I didn't see how it was going to happen. And then watching this trailer, and seeing everything that they're bringing to bear on it, just super interesting. And I mean, like, says to me that Apple is bringing quality shows to its own streaming platform. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of us have had worries about just how good Apple would be with that, especially with rumors about Tim Cook meddling mm-hmm. in shows. And like, you know, with notes like, you know, can't you be nice or something to that effect?
Be nicer or something.
Be
yeah.
Nicer. Don't be so mean.
Don't be so mean. Thank you very much, John.
Yes.
And then, you know, Apple's avoidance of sex and gore. And, you know, there's that. I think a lot of us have been nervous about what kind of shows are actually going to come based on this one trailer. I'm suddenly a lot more excited about Apple service than I had been, and I was already kind of excited.
Yeah, and I think for my assessment of this trailer is, as odd as this sounds, like I could see this looking at this trailer. If you took out the split second of like from Apple or whatever it says at the beginning, I would have believed you if you had told me that this was a new Netflix show or a new Amazon show or a new HBO show or something coming to, you know, some other like Showtime or some other sort of, you know, premium service. Like I would absolutely believe that. This strikes me as something on the level of other stuff that, you know, lots of other people say is really good television that I like to watch, you know, like, even though the trailer doesn't show any of the stuff that sometimes, other shows rely on to make their things interesting. Like, you know, without having to have any of the adult content warnings at the beginning, you know, this still strikes me as something that would be at home on Showtime next to Billions or at home on HBO next to Succession or any of these other kinds of things. And like you, I was like, how are you going to make a drama if the three people that I know in it are mostly known for lighter fare?
You know, well, that's the key, Kelly, mostly. Right there. That's the key. I've been going through this process of transitioning from USA Network Suits to, which is in its last season, to Pearson, which is a spinoff on Jessica Pearson.
Mm-hmm. Who's one of the characters on Suits for people who don't follow along, right?
Yeah, left the show and got spun out to a new series of her own.
Okay.
And one of the things that's been on my mind lately is that, you know, there's several ways to create tension. You can have science fiction where there's jeopardy and drama and physical danger. Or you can have people confronting each other and seizing power and arguing and having human conflict. And when you do the human conflict part of it, it can be kind of depressing in some ways because, you know, we have enough problems in our own lives. We don't need to see other people's problems. And the only way to get through that is to have engaging characters that you already know and already love, as you mentioned, Kelly.
Yeah.
Steve Carell and Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon are on established characters of a lighter fare who you can identify with. And even, you know, Jennifer Aniston's a beloved character from previous shows. And so
she's an actress, not a character.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that I think the way through this is that if you can pick one of the characters that you enjoy and you love, like, for example, in Suits, you had Mike Ross with an eidetic memory, mm-hmm. and Harvey Specter, incredibly handsome and talented. You have Donna, the office secretary, if she started off that way, and a tall redhead. And so if you find characters that you can personally identify with and like, then you can endure and go through and engage in and maybe even enjoy the troubles and the travails as they try to find their way through life and mm-hmm. try to meet challenges that are presented to them. And that's what I saw happening in this trailer, and that was my response. So I kind of feel the way Brian does, that this is not, you can't just look at it in terms of friction and people giving each other a hard time. You have to look at it in terms of engaging people you enjoy watching, mm-hmm. struggling with life's challenges and succeeding or failing and identifying with them. And that's the key to good drama, and I think that's going to be a good show.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. It does nothing to assuage my fundamental concerns about TV Plus, which is once I watch all of this show, what's left? But it definitely looks like a show that'll be interesting, and it will definitely be something that I am interested to see. As we get closer and find out more about some of the other programming that's available, we will talk about that too. But for now, we're going to have to call it for today. I would like to thank both of you very much for being here. So, John, thank you for coming by.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Brian, as always, thanks for being here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having us. Good times.
Yes. I love having both of you on, especially when we talk Apple history, because it's really fun to do with the perspective that each of you have. So thanks so much again. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.